Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The Russia-U.S. peace process appears to have come to an end. Should we expect more escalation? At the same time, the Europeans exist in their very own fantasy world. Also, the man in the White House is obviously Donald Trump, though his presidency should be named after John McCain. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we have Mark Sloboda. He's an international affairs and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick it off with Mark. Mark, we've started a new year. Happy New Year to both of you. But with the start of the new year, it seems something has come to an end, or a number of things have started and some things have come to an end. And I think this whole process, and in my introduction, I refer to it as the Russia-U.S. peace process, which includes mending the bilateral relationship. That has gone nowhere. And obviously, concluding the conflict in Ukraine has gone nowhere. So is this process essentially dead? We have to also point out the deadly attack that was pointed at Putin's residence, which was foiled, and the U.S. denies. I could go on and on about a number of issues that are not resolved. But at the beginning of this year, it seems like that is going nowhere.
Yeah, as Italian Prime Minister Meloni said, no matter how bad 2025 was, don't worry, 2026 will be worse. And I think we've already seen a entrance into the year of epic geopolitical proportions in the conflict in Ukraine, in Venezuela, Iran, and elsewhere. So the peace process is, I mean, it was already a moot exercise in futility with the U.S., the Kiev regime in Ukraine, and the Europeans constantly arguing amongst themselves and even being able to come to any type of coordinated position, none of which would have met Russia's demands for the special military operation, which they have never budged from the beginning of the conflict, except to make them harder. So there was really no chance there. But it seems even the Trump administration has mostly given up. Supposedly, Zelensky is going to arrive in Washington this week for the upteenth discussion of quote unquote security guarantees, which is just another way of saying NATO in Ukraine or Ukraine in NATO, neither of which Russia will accept anyway. So it's all futile. But there is all kinds of indications that we are seeing escalation on both sides. It must be said with the revelation in the New York Times that the Trump administration's CIA, with his blessing, is escalating the secret war against Russia, providing him with, not so plausible, so shall we say implausible deniability, since it's written all across the pages of the New York Times. That this attacks on oil refineries are completely being directed by the CIA, down to which couplers they're hitting to maximize downtime. These attacks on civilian shipping is also orchestrated by the Trump regime's CIA. And considering that they're in charge of everything else with the drones, and everything that the Kiev regime's intelligence agencies do, again, by long-standing bragging within the New York Times, I find it very, very hard to believe that they were not involved in the attempted assassination attack on President Putin at the Valchai presidential state residence in Novgorod. Meanwhile, Russia has just responded to this with another use of the Oreshnik, the hypersonic ballistic missile, this time lobbed into Western Ukraine, just across the European border. Obviously a message to the Europeans that if you want to come into Ukraine, as Dmitry Medvedev himself said, if you want a war, come on in, this is what you'll get. And that was a very pointed message.
Well, George, it seems in this new year, the winners in this whole debacle right now is the Europeans. They have succeeded in coming together, having a somewhat coherent message, and it's been very hard coming for them. And they've been able to foil Washington's attempts to move forward on this. So the Europeans, you know, we mock them here and they deserve mockery, but they're the ones in this whole scenario that are succeeding because they keep the war going.
No, that's right. What they've accomplished, and that the various attempts on the part of the Trump administration to bring this to an end, to come to some kind of an accommodation with Russia, are really pretty much at an end. I mean, we've had various Trump plans. We had originally the unconditional ceasefire, which the Europeans seized on. Then we had the 28-point plan that was watered down to the 20-point plan. And so now, essentially, you know, we had all the Anchorage and the Budapest meeting. None of that has come to anything. So the Europeans have indeed accomplish their goal, which is to keep the war going and to wait out Trump. They obviously don't like Trump. They don't trust Trump. But as long as they've got Trump on board, and now there's Trump apparently has given his blessing to Lindsey Graham's bill, the 500% tariffs bill. That's happened before. We'll see whether this time Trump will indeed sign this into law. But on the other hand, there are the Europeans who are not really very keen on actually getting involved themselves. I mean, they want America to get involved, but this coalition of the willing, I mean, this meeting that took place last week in Paris, I mean, who exactly is promising to send troops into Ukraine? It's only the British and the French. Because even the Germans,
and that's conditioned if the Americans
exactly the American backstop, but the Germans have already ruled out sending any German forces. They said, well, we will send them into neighboring countries. We're not going to actually send them into Ukraine. Maloney has also said no Italian forces. The Poles have said no Polish forces. So they keep talking about this. They're going to do this, whatever, you know, ceasefire monitoring, you know, helping Ukraine. But so far, only the British and the French are apparently on board. But so, yes, the Europeans have kept the war going, but they're not very keen on getting involved themselves.
You know, Marco, Giorgio Meloni's name was just mentioned there. She, quite remarkably, and she does kind of stand out. Maybe it's because she's a woman, but she said, mooting that there should be a special EU envoy to start talking to the Russians. A day late and a buck short?
Yeah, 4 years into the war. And this has been done before. Macron did try to talk to Putin on a phone a few months ago and evidently just went back into the standard European lecturing, like they're in any type of position to either morally or politically lecture to the Russian president in the midst of a conflict, by their own admission that they are in and that they are losing very badly. I don't really expect anything to come from it. Italy is not the least of important of European countries, but neither is the most important. With regards to this whole coalition of the willing nonsense, it may become something real down the line, a year from now when, or 2 years, whatever, in the course of the conflict, when Russia crosses the Dnieper River in force, moves on Kiev or Odessa, then there'll be frantic outrage and screaming and desperation. And there may be some real desperate attempt to put some British or French human tripwire force on the ground in Ukraine. But for right now, the primary purposes of it is simply to make sure, not that there was any chance, as far as I'm concerned anyway, that there will be no peace process, right? Because they know That is a red line for the Russians. No Ukraine in NATO, no NATO in Ukraine. And that means the British and French. So as long as they keep threatening that, well, then, you know, there is zero chance of any diplomatic settlement. And once again, whether Trump, you know, under whatever terms he thought he was going to end this conflict on American terms, and he was going to charm or dictate or sanction Putin into accepting that, none of that worked. And he wasn't even able to impress his will on the Europeans or the Kiev regime either. For all his bluff and bluster, he is an extremely weak president. On both a personal and a political level. All he seems able to do is, kidnap the Venezuelan president after a remarkable CIA co-option exercise that had the entire Venezuelan military stand down, as far as I can see.
Well, you know, George, it's really in light of the Maduro kidnapping. It was interesting that President Trump was asked, would he consider abducting, kidnapping Vladimir Putin? I think that really tells us where we are in all of this. And plus, the Russians have procured evidence that these drones that were targeting his residence, the satellite tracking data, obviously the Russians know where it came from. It actually did happen. And so now Trump is being asked, he was supposed to solve this problem in a day. Now he's being asked if he's going to kidnap the Russian president. That's the way we're starting 2026.
Well, and it's understandable because the sequence of events that led to that assassination attempt clearly have American markings all over them. I mean, there was the meeting in Mar-a-Lago with Zelensky. Before that, Trump has this telephone call at Trump's initiative with Putin. And then Trump tells Putin, well, you know, I'll hang up now. I'm going to talk to Zelensky, talk to the Europeans, and then I'm going to call you back. So don't go anywhere.
Meaning, don't go away.
Wait on the line.
Yeah, wait on the line.
Right there.
And then, boom, there's the attack. And then Trump, of course, does the, I'm shocked, horrified, appalled by what happened. And then, but then 2 days later, he starts sending out this, the New York Post editorial, oh, it was all made up by the Russians. And then Trump himself then says later, yeah, it was all made up. But the CIA did not actually say it was made up. They just simply said, oh, well, they were hitting a target somewhere in the vicinity. Okay, so what was the target?
Well,
in the
George, if it had succeeded, they would have taken credit for
exactly.
it.
That's for and that's sure. And that's exactly the point. If it succeeded, and that's why I think this is going to happen again. They're going to try this and again, even as they deny. No, heaven forbid we would ever try to do something like that. But if it were to succeed, then they would absolutely be, you know, whooping with joy and celebrating themselves.
All right. On that note, gentlemen, I have to jump in. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Mark, let me go to you. I came across this phrase yesterday, forced-based international order. Obviously, that is the rules-based order is what it used to be called. Now it's force-based. I will be a bit contrarian here. Nothing has really changed, okay? It's just the way it's talked about. And, clutching pearls. Oh, how can you do that? How can you be so aggressive against international law? Well, this is always the case. This has been the case since the Second World War. We saw it not so much during the Cold War, but ever since then, the unipolar moment has morphed into a different era. But, the United States didn't have a UN Security Council resolution to invade Iraq, for example. It didn't have a UN Security Council resolution to destroy Libya, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm sorry, I'm not going to clutch my pearls. This is the way things always have worked. It's just being presented differently. It's more vulgar. Yes, Mark.
Force-based international order. That sounds something completely like the United States chief frat boy Hegseth.
Yeah, well, I mean,
say.
It doesn't roll. It doesn't roll off the tongue. It doesn't roll off the tongue.
Yeah. So, to a degree, right? The U.S. has always acted this way, although I have to admit that while the U.S. went after Manuel Noriega on nonsense drug charges in 1990 in a similar way, it wasn't done with quite the same impunity and audacity that just happened in Venezuela. And combine that with the U.S. president, threatening renewed bombings in Iran, renewed bombings in Nigeria, actually renewed bombings in Syria and Somalia. And I don't know, is Greenland next? The Daily Mail. Okay, yes, it's the Daily Mail, but is talking about Trump pushing a plan to, militarily invade Greenland next. And Canada's got to be nervous. On top of that,
don't forget Panama.
Colombia, Mexico. I mean, the list goes on. This is to a degree rhetorical, right? But obviously, Trump feels emboldened by what he at least at this point perceives as a successful use of military and covert force in Venezuela. And I don't know, it seems to me that coming out of that I don't know, he's popping neocon Viagra or something of the sort. But there is also a complete refutation of international law in a way that has never happened before. Whether it was Iraq or Afghanistan, there was always at least a fig leaf appeal to a nod towards international law.
But Mark, the result is the same. Okay, that's my point here. You know, George, Mark brought up Greenland. I mean, as we convened here, I read British media is reporting that the some NATO countries may be deploying troops to Greenland as a shield, I guess, against a potential American kinetic operation there. I mean, that is different. That is different. Well, thinking of European countries, I don't know how they will get there. Maybe they have to borrow American equipment to do this stuff. It seems so nonsensical to me.
Peter, are they going to send pass the popcorn?
Okay, go ahead, George.
Well, no, but of course, what the Europeans don't seem to realize is that this is the price of doing business. The Europeans were so insistent on involving the United States, on absolutely insisting the United States, pull their chestnuts out of the fire and keep this war going in Ukraine. And they've been doing this really ever since Trump returned to office. Well, this is the price of doing business. And Trump says, well, okay, I mean, you want the Americans involved. There's a price to pay. And there's always been a price to pay whenever the Americans get involved in other people's conflicts. I mean, in World War II, there was a price to pay. The British had to pay a price, which is to liquidate their empire, liquidate all their assets in the Caribbean, hand it all over to the Americans. That's the way United States has always operated. So there's nothing at all new in Trump, bringing up the Greenland issue. This is a longstanding issue. He did this in the first term, and he's determined to get it. And I think he will. I think the Europeans are not going to be able to resist if Trump continues with this. But there are other aspects of the Trumpian agenda which are, I think, a little odd. I mean, you talked earlier on about the McCain foreign policy. So on Iran, he does sound like John McCain. And he truthed out so Lindsey Graham's, ludicrous ranting and raving about the Ayatollahs, the Nazis and whatever. And, if the Ayatollahs, shoot anyone, we will be there and we're going to start shooting them. This is McCain talk. And for Trump to get indignant about the forces of law and order bringing rioting to an end is a little bit much. I mean, Trump himself is not exactly averse to using force, force to bring rioting to an end.
It uses brutal force and kills people, actually. Mark, Iran is being brought up here. I mean, it seems interesting to me, when politicians are on the stump and they're running, okay, we expect them, hyperbole. But I mean, John McCain really is in spirit in the White House right now. Why is Trump doing this? Because he gets no resistance. See, having taken a different approach to foreign policy, he got so much resistance in his first term. Go with the flow. He seems to be, enjoying this. And he's turned into a foreign policy president because, you know, these adventures that he wants to pursue, he's not going to get any pushback.
I don't think that John McCain would have ever threatened to invade Greenland. I think John McCain actually was a stalwart champion of the transatlantic relationship, which Trump, he would hesitate to wipe his posterior with it for the amount of respect he does it. And I think that matters in a way. Maybe the Trump administration is a John McCain if all restraints were removed from John McCain. Trump himself has recently said that the only limitation on his actions as the U.S. president is not international law, but his own very questionable sense of morality. May all the gods have mercy on our souls. But I don't agree with that at all. I mean, I think he's wrong. And there are two very real constraints on his power, and that is the other great powers, that is Russia and China. And they can't stop the U.S. everywhere and at any time, as Venezuela clearly showed. But they can protect their own interests, as we've seen with Trump's shamefaced retreat from a trade war with China, or for their inability to either defeat Russia or even to impose an end to the conflict on American terms in Ukraine.
Well, George, what's the rush? Okay. I mean, it's difficult to keep up with all of the hotspots that are developing. We have, Mark already mentioned a lot. Okay. We have Venezuela, we have Cuba, Panama, Greenland, who knows, Canada may be thrown in the mix here. Obviously, more seriously, Iran. Is Trump in a hurry?
Well, I think he is in a hurry. I mean, time is running out. He's got 3 years left of his presidency. He's got the midterms coming up within about 9-10 months. He's likely to lose those, and then he's going to face some impeachment. So then he's going to be bogged down with impeachments for the last 2 years of his presidency. But I think Mark is right in saying that the Trumpian agenda is a little different from McCain. McCain was indeed absolutely a transatlanticist. He wanted to keep NATO going and so on. I think when it comes to Iran, it's at least at this stage, it's not clear whether what Trump is doing is just anything more than rhetorical to say that he's going to start shooting and bombing Iran if they start hurting any rioters. Whom is he going to attack? What difference does he make? So he's sounding like McCain, but I don't see that he's likely to do anything serious there. But it is true that he's gone back to a more old style American presidency, which is you don't pick fights with peer powers. I mean, he really isn't very keen on getting into a serious confrontation with Russia in the way that Biden was. And I think that was, and the way McCain was. I think McCain would have got himself into probably a shooting war by now with Russia. So he is different from McCain in that sense. But when it comes to, Latin America, Central America, he has gone back to really an era of really brutal, ruthless American interventionism. And, he didn't invent it. This was done by previous presidents. They were even more ruthless than he was. The Venezuela operation was relatively clean. Reagan led and sort of throughout the 1980s a horrific war against Nicaragua and Guatemala, El Salvador. Trump hasn't done that. So he's actually more reasonable than his predecessors.
Well, I mean, but Mark, I mean, George is talking about peer-to-peer conflict. I mean, targeting Vladimir Putin, this spider web attack, things like that, which had nothing to do with the conflict in Ukraine. That was the nuclear triad here. This is a risk that other presidents wouldn't have taken, at least I would think so. So, I mean, I said in my introduction, can we expect that escalation? I think we will, particularly when it comes to NATO's posture towards Russia.
Yeah, to an extent, I agree with George, right? The Trump administration seems he's very hesitant to involve anything that puts boots on the ground in any major way. He likes to drop bombs and forget. Right, declare victory, and whether that actually solves anything, I'm very questionable about. He likes to threaten, kinetic operations, but his limitations. But as you point out, at least as far as the Russians are concerned, the U.S. just directed an assassination attempt against their president. Right. And Trump seems to be operating under the delusion that anything the CIA does happens under the covers and it doesn't count. Right.
OK, gentlemen, I have to jump in here. The year is young and I'm sure we're going to be talking about conflicts nonstop. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.